swinging a liner to right field. Base hit. It's going to head towards the right field corner. Vientos turns third. He'll score. Alonso to third. He's going to be waved in. The ball slow coming out of the corner.
Pitch. Ground ball to first. Hoskins with a dive. Piob's covering, a race to the bag. Safe is the call.
Now all the way around to score is Taylor. Bases loaded, two out on the fifth. First pitch. Line the other way. Base hit right field. Lindor is in. Iglesias being waved in. Frilich's throw to the plate. Not in time.
Bad.
Breaking ball. Hit on the ground. Right side. Base hit right field. Two-run score. J.D. Martinez with a two-run single. And the Mets have...
Swing and a miss, struck him out, Buto.
Here's the 1-2 to Terang. Swung on and missed, strike three. Got him with a split, put it in the books.
Welcome to this post-game edition of the Talking Mets podcast as I come to you the morning after Game 1 of the Wild Card Series. By now you know the Mets defeated the Brewers 8-4, and they have a 1-0 lead in the best-of-three series. And they have a chance tonight with Sean Manaea, their ace on the mound, to clinch and move on for a date with the Philadelphia Phillies this weekend. But reaction, and as I had told everybody, I was going to come to you after the morning after each game, had a chance to marinate on the game, a quick turnaround, and it's that time of the year where sleep is an option. If you're a baseball fan, you're a Mets fan, if this thing goes deep into October, maybe November, you're not going to be getting a lot of sleep over the next month, and already one game. I'm tired. I did the spaces with our good friend and collaborator, Subway to Shea, Anthony Rivera, last night. Go over to X, check that out. We had a great 90-minute conversation, brought some of the fans on, and if you have a chance, we're going to be doing that after each postseason game, usually 15 minutes or so after the game, and you might have a chance to give your comments. You can come and just listen, but we'd love to hear from you. We had some great commentary, but really, when I was thinking about the Mets 8-4 win, which, I mean, it's crazy. Here you are, we're talking about the season, the innocent climb, this crazy win against the Braves, and a wild Monday doubleheader, Francisco Lindor with an MVP performance. And by the time it settles in and you marinate on it, it's game one, and you're in the middle of game one, and you're in the middle of a crisis as the Mets come out. And to a certain degree, it was hard to see the Mets after all the emotions of Monday, even though it wasn't and I don't want to feel sorry for guys taking luxury airline accommodations, flying from Atlanta, from Milwaukee to Atlanta, back to Milwaukee. I'm not going to be here feeling sorry for them, but you're playing a sport at a high level against the best competition when the stakes are the highest. These are peripheral opponents, like we've talked about, that are just part of the sport. They're part of winning a championship. And this was not a game that the Mets could punt. You can't punt any game in a three-game set, best of three. But it was a game that I felt was going to be really hard to justify seeing the Mets win. And I had said before the series, I don't make predictions, and I wasn't going to get too deep into the Milwaukee series. But if the Mets were going to win this thing and win this three-game set, it was probably going to be in three, and it was probably going to be games two and games three with Manaea, and then potentially, I don't know how they're going to go game three. It sounds like Quintana might be the choice. I don't know if they'd bring back Peterson on short rest. We'll see how that goes, and maybe it won't be necessary because Manaea's going tonight. So the Mets, everything is set up for the Mets just going, okay, we're in the series, we're settled down, Monday's over, we're in the postseason, let's get at and win game two and win game three. They're down 2-0 early, the Brewers have the bases loaded. Everybody watching, myself included, I said, this is going to be bad. The Brewers are going to put up a nice crooked number. Maybe the Mets and Severino will settle down, and you know, maybe they'll make it close, but this doesn't look like the kind of game that the Mets are going to be able to pull out. Severino was not on. It seemed like the Brewers were on everything. He was falling behind, which forced them to use his fastball. And, you know, Severino's only at his best when he gets ahead. He's able to use that sweeper to get outs, to get soft contact and strikeouts. So I think right there, if you want to talk about where the Mets are at, at about 5:45, Game starts about 5:30 on a Tuesday. 5:45, you're ready to see the Mets get the doors blown off of them, right? And the Mets are known, and this is really the theme of Game 1, and maybe it'll become the theme of the Mets season and this postseason run, however long this lasts. We talk about all these things, analytics and numbers and baseball savant and exit velocity and all the high-end stuff, and we do it at a very granular level. We're the back of the paper bag group of people, right? We're just trying to have some fun here, talk baseball, understand it. And sometimes winning and losing comes down to just playing baseball and making baseball plays. And I think yesterday, it was really nothing more complicated than that. It wasn't a long home run. It wasn't the best player on the field. It wasn't the big name free agent. It wasn't anything more complicated than with two outs, the Mets moving the chains on the lineup, and really the big play, and I think the big play in the entire game, is Jose Iglesias, who has been hitting all year, but even since McNeil went down, has stepped it up another level and seems to, with runners in scoring position, find a way to drive those runs in and make contact, hits a shot to the opposite side, and Rhys Hoskins, look what I found, not a great first baseman, makes the play, but has trouble getting up, and here's Iglesias busting it down the line, sliding into first, head first, which you're not supposed to do, but actually it looks like it threw off Piamps, where he couldn't find the base. Tyrone Taylor, heads up play, comes around to score. And really the Mets, and I don't know if this was part and parcel to with their backs up against the wall or playing Milwaukee and seeing how active Milwaukee is on the base paths, but the Mets have been a lot more active on the bases since the weekend. And what you saw Taylor do, that's a component, actually, that at times the Mets have lacked. They really weren't a running team. They don't have those kind of players, but they have a few of them, and I think maybe you're going to see Carlos Mendoza get a little bit more active and aggressive. Mike Sarbaugh, third base, things like that. So all the stuff about a baseball season, all the things we talk about, things that need to happen, the production that needs to happen, the changes that the team needs to make, bullpen management, whatever. It just comes down to making baseball plays. And you had the Iglesias play, which I thought was the turning point in the play of the game. You have Severino, who didn't have his best stuff through the first three or four innings. But every time they were about to blow his doors off, whether it be the first inning, the third inning when he got the double play on Hoskins, and even in the fourth, the bottom of the fourth, when they scored two runs, Milwaukee, to take the lead back and go up 4-3, he limited the damage. He made a big pitch, and then the Mets explode for five runs in the fifth, and this is the biggest part. Severino finds himself, goes out, shuts Milwaukee down in the fifth, and then gives the Mets the sixth inning. And if the Mets win this series, there are going to be two individuals that I think are going to at least be credited with setting them up for winning. Because it's not just about the 8-4 game one win. It's about how they're set up in this short series after they had a fight to get into the postseason for games 2 and 3. Because the blueprint is good starting pitching, getting you into the 6th or 7th, having a rested and healthy bridge that gets the ball to Diaz in the 9th. That's how the Mets are going to win games. How they won yesterday was an anomaly. They won without their closer, without their setup man. They were down in the bullpen. So Severino getting into the 6th, settling down, finding himself. And then, to me, the real player of the game, and I talked about this with Anthony Rivera, Subway to Shea, on the X space yesterday, is Jose Buto. Coming in, he hasn't pitched that well late in the year. He was a big part of the bullpen in July and August, as they were trying to figure out, and Stearns was trying to figure out how he was going to fix the pen before Stanek, before Maton, before Brazenban, who didn't even really help the bullpen all that much. It was Buto that was bridging those innings. When Diaz was out, he was tremendously important. But then he kind of got forgotten about, struggled in the West Coast trip, gave up a big home run in the San Diego series back in August. But here he comes in. He bridges two innings. He's dominant. The Brewers don't sniff a hit after the fourth inning. And I thought that the only quibble, or maybe the second guess first guessed at the time was I thought Mendoza just let him pitch into the ninth. But he would, see, this is where Mendoza had a masterful 48 hours between how he prepared the Mets for the Atlanta series, you know, showing the gumption to leave Diaz out there. I love this post-game speech. We played it during the intro to our Atlanta series recap. And, you know, going out there and just finding the right buttons to push all game in game one. I mean, it's being talked about by John Harper over at SNY. I mean, that just, you're seeing growth of Mendoza. You see how good of a manager he is right before your eyes. But here he is bringing Stanek in, understanding that he's probably going to need Buto perhaps as early as tonight. I don't know if he's available, but you're even looking towards a game three where if it is Quintana that's going to be the starter, you might not get length out of Quintana. So Buto might have to come in, similar to how he almost came in for Severino here in game one. And Ryan Stanek, and there's a guy that was not really off the scrap heap, but Jerry DePoto just gifted him over to the Mets. And he was spotty at the beginning. And he does have a good resume, and a resume where he could be spotty at times in his career and could walk too many batters. But last night, he was throwing hard. He was throwing strikes. His secondary pitches were nasty. That strikeout to end the ballgame, what a nasty pitch. And he played every bit the role of Diaz that you would need from an actual Diaz without having Diaz on the mound. And it was just execution up and down the lineup. Throughout the roster, everybody doing what they needed to do within their role to get the job done. And that's what winning a championship, and that's what winning baseball is all about. Yeah, the analytics, the team building, all the stuff that we get caught up in the weeds with, those things are important. They do matter. You don't get here without good players. You don't get here without respecting and understanding what building a good baseball team is, what principles you need. But if you don't have the players willing to sacrifice, to prepare, to, within their role, be the best version of themselves, you'd never get anywhere. And ever since Memorial Day, and I think Mendoza talked a lot about it time and time again with the media, but it really came, it was crystallized when I listened to his post-game speech after Atlanta. This was a group of guys that since Memorial Day could have easily taken their paychecks, counted down the days so they were either traded from New York or the end of the season. They all would have still been very wealthy. They all still would have had careers elsewhere outside of New York. It wasn't like they were going to never be heard from again, some of these guys. And they, not only did they embrace New York, not only did they want to not be traded, not to have the season spiral out of control, they're trying to make something of this. And I think a point was made on the spaces yesterday by one of our listeners, and I can't remember, and I apologize if you're listening, which one of you made this point, but this is a team that has some grinders, whether it be Winker, who was imported midseason, and some of the grit you saw as he races around the bases, and whether he talked trash to Willy Adames or not, who knows, to guys like Harrison Bader, a winning player like Tyrone Taylor, Acuna coming up and doing his thing since he came up. J.D. Martinez, just when you thought it was time to put him in a coffin in his career, there he goes out. He pinches hit for Winker in a big spot to give the Mets an extra couple of runs. Goes the other way with a professional at-bat and gives you whatever. Maybe this is the last rays of sunshine that J.D. Martinez has in his career. So, yeah, Lindor, the MVP, all the things we've talked about, that's all legit. But it's all these other small things. And I'll even say, and Anthony Rivera talked about it on the spaces, you had Vientos with a couple of hits, first postseason game, going the other way with that big hit to give the Mets the lead in the fifth. But I even pointed out how Pete Alonso walked three times. Pete, who has been just criticized all year for bad at-bats, bad approaches at the plate. And I've even said that one of the biggest disappointments I have for Pete Alonso is not that he's not a good player and not that he's a valuable run creator, is that he's never quite evolved. You're not expecting him to be Aaron Judge when it comes to an eye at the plate, but he's never evolved to maybe be like a Paul Goldschmidt or add some patience to his repertoire at the plate so that maybe he doesn't get some of those tough off-speed pitches that he struggled with all year. That maybe he puts himself into better counts. And guess what? walking three times, it may not be that three-run bomb that puts the game away or that gets on SportsCenter, but one of his walks off the bat, which was in the second inning, helped create a couple of runs with the Winker triple. So these are all good baseball plays. Simple, granular things that you're expected to do in Little League and Sandlot. Heck, if some of you play, your leagues might still be going, Sunday Beer League at a higher level. These are things that your teammates expect you to do in those amateur situations. And that's what wins you a ball game. So there's not much to quibble with here when it comes to game one with the Mets. They are set up perfectly. They could not be in a better position. When you look at where the Mets were after the Philadelphia game and how awful that first game in Atlanta went, and then how the weather threw a complete monkey wrench into their schedule, into their prep to not only win and close out a wild card spot, but be in a good spot for the postseason, you could not have asked, especially if you just rewind time back to after the game one loss in Atlanta last week, you could not ask for a better spot for the Mets to be in right now. One up, have to do one more in Milwaukee. Not a bad home crowd. I wouldn't say it's the most raucous, difficult place to play, but it's a loud place. It's a fan base that wants to see their Brewers, who have a great season, advance. Milwaukee, and I said this also last night, Milwaukee, we saw the first three games of the year when we didn't really know everything about them because we were just trying to figure out who the hell are these Mets that David Stearns put together. And then we saw them the last three games where they're not necessarily playing their roster or playing the games in the same manner they would if it was a playoff game or a regular season game in the middle of the year. One of the things that we see with Milwaukee is they're not a team that on Baseball Reference will have a lot of numbers stand out to you. Yeah, you have Churio, you have Contreras, you have Adames from an offensive standpoint. We all know who Rhys Hoskins is. And sure, Freddie Peralta, who I'm not saying is overrated, but it's not like he's... I mean, I don't even think he's Schwellenbach. I mean, he's a good pitcher, but you could get to him, and the Mets did that. Even when he had that really good first inning, they worked him. And they have definitely good arms coming out of the bullpen. But remember, bullpen arms are in the bullpen for a reason. Whether you're the Mets fans who worry about the kerosene on the fire that could come up at any time out of the Mets bullpen, or you're the Brewers who have a really good bullpen, guys who performed at a very high level, there's always a chance that this is the day that kerosene will be thrown on the fire when a bullpen arm comes out, especially when you can't have your starter go more than four innings like Pat Murphy had yesterday with Peralta. And Piamps was that guy yesterday, and the Mets took advantage. That's the thing about the Mets. If you're the opposition, they're not going to hit you and come at you every inning. The Brewers, in a lot of ways, and that's why it was so important how Severino and Buto pitched with Terang and Churio and then the middle of the lineup with guys like Mitchell and Adames and Contreras. They kind of keep, they're not sexy names, not like they all have 950 OPSs, but they give you good at-bats, and when they get on base, they put a lot of pressure on you because they run. So I think they seem like they're a better offensive team than they are. In a lot of ways, they're different than the Mets. The Mets don't come at you and push you and put pressure on you every inning. When the Mets get an inning going, it's hard to get them to stop. You saw that in the fifth with the five runs. So they'll put up a big crooked number. You've been seeing this. There's so many examples time and time again. They'll put up a six spot on a blink of an eye, but then that's it. And then they're relying on their bullpen. They're relying on their defense. They're relying on their starting pitching to finish it out and get the job done. So this is not complicated. It's no reason to really go on and on. Good baseball players making good baseball plays. Nothing more than that. Player of the game for me, I'll give it to Buto because of what he did to bridge the innings. And I think he's going to be looked at as someone that saved the Mets bullpen and set them up really well for a win today. And I'll even give a little tiny player of the game to Severino for battling through, keeping them in the game when it looked like he was about to get his doors blown off, and then settling down and giving them really good performance in the fifth and the sixth, because that settled the game down and then set it up perfectly for Mendoza to use Buto in the best possible way he could. He had a short pen. He didn't have to go down the line there. And then, wow, Ryan Stanek. And I'll leave you with this. If the Mets bridge of Stanek and Maton are going to party like they did at their best in Houston a couple of years ago, man, that all of a sudden changes the Mets' bullpen dynamic by a lot. Now, it's still going to come down to living and dying with Diaz, and we're going to have that moment, and we may very well may have that tonight. I think we're going to have it either tonight or tomorrow if everything plays out this way. I don't see a scenario where we don't have a Diaz moment. I think the Mets are going to get one of these games into the ninth with a lead. Now, whether or not he can close it out, and it won't be easy because you're against a team that, when they get on base, Diaz doesn't hold anybody on. I mean, I think your grandmother could run on him. So it's going to be a challenge, but we'll see if Diaz can get the job done against a lineup that doesn't have boppers like Ohtani and Freddie Freeman or Kyle Schwarber or any of those guys up and down, but they have some grinder, tough baseball players, guys like Turang and Churio and Adamas and even like a Jake Bowers and Hoskins and so on and so forth. So it comes down to making baseball plays, and the Mets made the baseball plays. And I'll say this, team, we haven't really talked about the chip on its shoulder. We've talked about this team wanting to have fun, not being overwhelmed by the pressure of past failures, but they may have a little bit of a chip on their shoulder. And you heard that with Mendoza after the Braves win, where he keeps reminding them, nobody thinks you should be here. Nobody thinks that you're good. Everybody kept saying all winter, despite the fact that if you just listened to David Stearns, the Mets had every intention of competing. Basically, everybody said this is a bad team without really starting to look. And okay, you want to give them, want to give the media pass. Who the hell knew that Mark Vientos was going to be as good as he was going to be? And who the hell could have predicted Jose Iglesias back in December when he was signed off the scrap heap would be one of their better hitters and one of their key contributors this year? But as the season went on and you watch, if you just watch these guys, forget Grimace and OMG and all that stuff, you saw tough players, well-managed, good fundamentals, good defense. Sure, they're flawed. They're not perfect, and there's definitely soft underbelly to their roster. But they're well-managed, and they want to win, and they're not, right as of now, they haven't really got caught up at the big moment. So on to game two, Sean Manaea. The Mets have a chance to close it out. At the beginning of the series, I had a feeling this would go the full Monte three games. I don't like making predictions, and I wouldn't be surprised if the Brewers come back with a big performance. And all year, it's been the Mets going the path of the hardest path possible. So it wouldn't shock me that we're back here tomorrow having a post-game saying, hey, the Mets have a decisive game again. But I feel really good about game two, and the blueprint's the same. Manaea goes out, shuts Milwaukee down, Mets put up a crooked number, and then hand it off to the bullpen. And they have their bullpen. They have their Maton. They have their Diaz today. Be interesting if Stanek now kind of gets a little bit more run in the circle of trust. And we'll see what, the game starts at 7:30. We'll see around 10:30, 11 o'clock where the Mets stand. Maybe it'll be a champagne-soaked Spaces, me and Anthony Rivera post-game tonight on X. Check it out, at Talking Mets No G. Follow me on X and be a part of that fun. And then, of course, tomorrow morning, marinate on game two, and we'll be back here at the Talking Mets podcast to discuss it. Okay, that's it. Have a great day. Rest up. We'll see everybody tonight after the game. You can check me out in the interim all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. As I said, you get me on X, at Talking Mets No G, and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. No G, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. And of course, I want to thank the good folks from the Fan-Sided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. I'm your host, Mike Silva. See you later tonight. Till then, buckle up. Game two. Take care, everybody.
For the